began so long ago with a band of Queen's Park men.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Spiders Talk podcast. David Blair, Enzo Tamanini and Callum Stewart back again. We've got no game to discuss. The away trip to Dunfermline was called off with that cold snap and a fair bit of snow that seemed to surprise the majority of people around the country. However, we do, of course, have a big news story to talk about. I suppose didn't really come as a surprise that Marijn Bucher has accepted a role at Ajax back in the Netherlands, and he's obviously left Queen's Park as a result of that. We'll have a chat about that, where we think it leaves Queen's Park, and maybe any potential fears that we may have, as I say, as to how it leaves us going forward. We also got the news today that Gardner Spears had also left Queen's Park after 16 years at the club in a number of different roles. We'll have a wee chat about him as well. And we will get back to the football, where hopefully it will go ahead this Saturday at home to Inverness Caledonian Thistle. Calvin Enzo, as I say, we have made it through a particularly cold snap. I'm sitting here in my lovely big fleecy hoodie that I picked up, and it's absolutely fantastic. I think you've got the same one, Callum. Managed to be off the snow, but we're here to discuss a pretty big story about Queen's Park.
Yeah, I was thinking we were going to have a week off after the Dunfermline game, to be honest, but not a chance this time, unfortunately. Or fortunately, depending on who you speak to, Bucher's left. And I think we all seen it coming. In standard fashion, it came the day after we recorded the episode. Yes, so if there's any more big news, we're recording this on a Tuesday night. If there's any more big news, you can be rest assured it will happen tomorrow. But yeah, plenty to pick apart and start speculating about what might be next.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, given how we've been playing recently, it was quite nice to have a wee break from it. I've got my heating on right up, and I have done for about a week and a half now, so I'm not particularly looking forward to my next energy bill coming through the door. But there's never actually a dull moment with this club these days. I can't remember the last time we had a spell of maybe 3 or 4 weeks of just being a normal football club that plays and occasionally wins matches without anything mental happening in the background. And this week's no different. So, yeah, plenty of drama, even if there wasn't actually a game. And obviously we do have a game to look forward to, which I'm not sure look forward to is the correct term, given how things are going at the minute. But plenty to discuss.
There certainly is. I say, let's get right into it. Obviously, start talking about Marijn Bucher leaving Queen's Park, going to Ajax. He was announced by Ajax last Wednesday. And he has taken up a director of football role at Ajax. So previously when he was at AZ Alkmaar, he was head of player development. He came to Queen's Park as director of football, and now he's gone to Ajax. 2 years in at the club, just over 2 years spent at Queen's Park into this 10-year contract, which I think we all now really know was offered to him and obviously what he signed. It was never obviously confirmed by Queen's Park, but you hear enough reports, we know enough people that indeed was the case. We'll start firstly just talking about solely as Queen's Park fans, and being, I'll start by saying, a little bit concerned as to perhaps where it may leave the club. But I suppose even before that, just in general, the actual fact that Marijn Bucher left the club 2 years into this 10-year contract. A lot of opinions online. You had plenty of people wishing him well, understanding that it doesn't really matter what you sign. You could sign a 500-year contract if they wanted, but with Ajax coming, who, biggest club in the Netherlands, one of the biggest and most well-known and reputable clubs in Europe, or indeed world football, it doesn't matter what we do or what we want to give him here. There's nobody's going to not answer that call, unfortunately. But as I say, there's plenty of people that are very unhappy. Some people very angry that, in fact, he has left this early into what is supposed to be this revolution at Queen's Park. Enzo, I suppose I'll come to you first. Where do you lie? What side of that do you lie? Do you lie you're sort of wishing him well and on his merry way, or do you even border on angry that he's gone?
It's a difficult question. So obviously, I absolutely do wish him all the best, because I think it's, as you say, it's very difficult for anybody to turn down Ajax for a club like Queen's Park. Even the, let's be honest, even us being fans of the club in that sort of situation, we probably find it difficult to say no to them as well. As you say, they're one of the biggest clubs in the world. That's undeniable, and there's a lot of opportunities, no doubt, come with that, that he wouldn't realistically get at Queen's Park. So I hope it works out for him. I hope he goes there and does well with them. At the same time, I'm actually quite enjoying the fact that Ajax are pretty rubbish. I always find it hilarious when these giant football clubs are struggling, and I'd like to see that continue. But his role isn't to go there and fix the problems that they're having this season. He's there to have a longer-term impact, as he was supposed to have at Queen's Park, and as he might still have, just depending on how much of his work he's been able to do up until this point. Only time will really tell. It's somewhat listen, right, nobody, as you say, nobody who signs a 10-year contract that isn't possible to get out of, it doesn't happen. We knew that was realistically going to be the case. There's going to be clauses and ways for people to break those contracts. You just have to hope that the club has managed to get a reasonable amount of compensation out of it as well. Although realistically, it's probably not something that we as fans will ever actually hear about. The club's statement, I thought, was a bit short. It was pretty unemotional, which suggested to me that the people writing it and the people behind the scenes weren't happy with his decision to leave. You can't force someone to stay and do a job when they would rather be elsewhere, because they're not going to have the same levels of dedication as what they would have done when they were really into it. It's just, it's a bit concerning, because obviously we don't know how much of his processes and ideology have actually been put in place and at what stage in this revolution, if you want to call it that. I hate all these buzzwords that keep getting chucked about whenever people talk about us, especially in the media, because we're easy targets for this sort of thing. They love talking about us. I'm just hopeful that he has had enough time to make some changes, that as long as we don't stray too far from the process, as another one of those words, that in the long run we'll still be okay. It's going to be really interesting though to see what this actually means in the immediate future for the club. I mean, do we bring in a new director of football? If we do, do we look abroad again, or do we look at somebody who knows the Scottish game a little bit better? Or does this mean that Robin Veltman, now assuming he's still at the club come January, has free rein to make signings? Was he ever actually brought in with the knowledge that that's part of what he can do as a head coach? Who knows? There's so much to this, and I'm trying to stay optimistic, and I'm trying to think that as long as we prioritise this idea of focusing on the young guys, bringing them through, we've talked about this so many times, developing them, selling them on for a profit, I think we can be okay without him. And to be fair, we've spoken to Bucher a number of times, and including on the podcast as well, and he has made it very clear that we shouldn't be dependent on him. He's here to do a job that means that if he does leave tomorrow, and obviously he has left last week, but you know, that's how we would put it in conversation, that if he left tomorrow, the club could carry on and still be successful. So you've just got to hope that is the case.
Yeah, I think for me, the frustration is more at the situation, I think, rather than him specifically. I think you'd be insane to turn down the opportunity to go to a club like Ajax. Obviously, it leaves us in the lurch a wee bit, but I can't begrudge him that. I think your point is right, Enzo, about where that leaves us and how far down that process, in inverted commas, we were. Because 2 years is not a massive amount of time. And throughout that period, we've seen, I think, a lot of good things, or we've heard of a lot of good things going on in the background. Obviously, the club got the elite academy status. They've brought in a whole raft of staff and coaching to the younger levels throughout Queens. And perhaps it's fair to say this is maybe to a degree been at the expense of this year's first team, because I think this was the first season where we were seeing the first team getting implemented in the way that Bucher would have wanted. He obviously made all of the signings for this season, and the guys are going through that bedding in period. And I mean, we can't beat around the bush, they're not there yet with it. But the one thing that I always thought when we were speaking to him and you listen to him in the podcast and stuff like that is he was very, very frank about the fact that he had no expectations that this would go well at the start. For me, it's perhaps going worse than what I would have expected and hoped. And for him to leave at that point, I think, is where the frustration arises for me in terms of timing and stuff like that, because he is basically leaving at a low ebb in regards to where the first team is and I think our general feelings towards the club. And I think a lot of people are rightly worried about several areas, and when you kind of combine Bucher leaving, the general lack of communication about other aspects of the club off the field with the stadium, etc., etc., I think there is a, well, maybe I'm speaking on behalf of people who don't share the same opinion, but for me anyway, and from some other people that I've spoke to, there is a wee bit of concern just about what the next decisions are going to be at the club. And that's where my biggest concern is. Fair enough, Booker's away, we'll move on. But who is making the decisions for the next 2-3 years worth of seniors at our club? I'm not clear about that. And based off of the decision-making processes that we've seen so far over the last few seasons in some areas of the club, I'm not 100% confident in how those decisions would be made. And for me, worst case scenario in this would be basically reverting to type and trying to just become another bog standard Scottish football club with the same philosophy as the however many other professional football teams in the league, because if we go head to head on that front, I don't think we could beat, and I think that's when we would start to fall back down the divisions, even if we had a spurt of temporary success, because we all know that Willie Hawke is absolutely minted and he could plough money into the club for a period of time should he want to, but I don't think he's going to do that based off of how we've seen stuff run so far. But if we did, I don't think we come out on top there. And the last thing I would like to see after all the effort that's been put in over the last few years in terms of getting ourselves into the Championship, etc., is for us to start falling back down the leagues, because I don't think anyone wants that, really.
No. I think it's probably fair to say, and I hope I'm not wrong here, David, when I say this, but we all feel quite similarly that it's not a positive thing. I was really surprised to read some feedback online, though, places like Twitter and elsewhere, some fans actually felt as though this was good news. Some fans felt as though maybe Bucher hasn't actually achieved anything with the club. Or I've heard some even stronger things than that said. I'm not going to necessarily repeat them. But that really surprised me, because the thing is, even if you think that Bucher maybe hasn't achieved much yet, the issue with that is we don't really know what is going on behind the scenes. We don't know what's been happening. And I think you're right to say, Callum, that it's a concern to leave the club in the hands of people who have been making really, really poor decisions recently. Or at least they've been making poor decisions that we're aware of. We don't know everything, because another poor decision that they've made is to keep us in the dark about so much.
Yeah, there's a few good points that you have both raised. I mean, first of all, just what you're saying, Andrew, I do agree with you both as well. I don't think it's a positive thing. Is that just, and I mean, unfortunately, sometimes we may be a little bit of an echo chamber between the three of us. There may be plenty of people listening to this telling their phones or their car radio, whatever they're listening, that we're talking absolute shite. But like, I don't know if it's maybe just reactions to a number of the points we've raised. The team underperforming this season, again, putting it politely, underperforming this season. There's been plenty of anger online at Bucher, Veldman, Dempster, anybody within earshot of the club, anybody that they can get a hold of. People are angry at that. Listen, that's football fans. People want to do that. That's entirely up to them. I think part of it is a bit of that. I think part of it is people maybe wanting these longer term decisions, longer term plans to kick in a little bit sooner. It was never supposed to really start 2 or 3 years in. It was always supposed to be 5 or 6 years in. You're going to see the fruits of the labour. And again, as well, I think a big one is the decision making process at the club and where that leaves us. I think that was my biggest biggest concern is the decision making when it came to this announcement, was because I think we all agree that with Marijn Bjuker, like, you knew what he was in control of, and you knew you could see the decisions he was making. Put it that way, you knew if something was happening, he's decided that that's happening at the club. There's been so much, every single fan knows, over the last 2, 3, 5 years, you know, or however long it is now since the Provo, 4 years since the Provo, you know, there's been a number of decisions made at the club that you've either not got a clue who's made it, or people deliberately do not own up to the decisions that have been made because they've been shocking. The lack of a clear decision maker at the club elsewhere, aside from Bjuker, where it was involved in the playing side, or whether it's the youth setups and all that kind of stuff, you know, we've not really heard from anybody at the club that that seems to be coming forward and, say, taking ownership of any decisions that are being made or whatever. So I do feel it leaves us a little bit rudderless right now, but I suppose we'll just have to wait and see. Where do you guys think it may leave Robin Veldman? I'm not quite sure. I've got two sort of scenarios here, and I don't know which one you may agree with, but do you think it will allow him to take a little bit more control over, say, the first team? Say, maybe, I think he believes in the way of playing football that we are trying to achieve right now. So I don't know if he'll change that much, but obviously with January, the transfer window opening up very soon, do you think it maybe allows him to have a little bit more control there and maybe the players coming in? Or do you think that it potentially removes what could well have been a safety net for him with Marijn Bjuker, and he may well be, as if he wasn't already, he may be even more exposed to the poor run of form?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I don't buy into any of the conspiracies that like Veldman's getting told to do X, Y, Z during a game and all that sort of stuff, which I've seen some comments online about. I'm pretty sure he's been signed with an agreement in the philosophy and the way in which the club should be playing football and bringing through youth players. And I think he genuinely believes that. I mean, if you look at his career history, it's basically just implementing what he's tried to do before, except this time he's actually the manager. Where I think it was going to come in most will be January. I mean, there was no indication in the very, very short news post that the club put on the website about whether they were going to be hiring a replacement for Bjuker. So if he has left, then you just have to assume that the default option is Veldman's going to be in control of that. What I'm hoping is that the club managed to get something resembling good compensation for Bjuker, which they could perhaps reinvest into the playing squad a wee bit. Whether that happens, I'm not sure. And it will be really interesting to see what he does if he does have a wee bit of money to play with, because I mean, we've obviously went through the summer and signed a very clear profile of player, incredibly young guys, often very little experience, and the hope to bring them through. But I'd imagine it must be a massive, massive temptation to go into the January transfer window and sign a couple of really, really experienced players that are just going to solidify and sort of help some of the younger guys keep the head a bit in these tough games when we've been throwing it away. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure Veldman will be thinking of his options and what he wants, because as far as we were aware, Bjuker was the one that made basically all of the signing decisions. I assume there was input in as a team between him and Veldman and the other coaching staff, but if it's just down to Veldman, then I guess he would have the option to mix that up a bit.
I think you've summed that up really well there, Callum. I don't know. It's kind of worth considering as well what Veldman was signed to do. I mean, was he brought in with the knowledge that aspect of being a manager? It seems a little bit foreign to us because it is foreign. It's something that happens a bit more often in other countries where the manager doesn't take much to do with signings. Was he ever made aware that if Bjuker leaves, that's something that would then fall on his shoulders? I mean, is that something that he has any experience doing? Is that something that he has the contacts to do? Who knows? I've absolutely no idea. And I think that aspect of it is going to be really, really interesting. I wouldn't necessarily be against it, signing a couple of experienced heads at this point to help the younger guys get through this really tough spell. But I also agree, Callum. David, sorry, you mentioned that it probably does leave him a little bit more exposed. I don't know whether his time could be even more limited at the club if things don't turn around, just based on the fact that he was Bucher's guy and he was probably going to get a decent amount of time regardless of how things were going, on the basis that Bucher stuck his neck out and gave this guy his first full-time. I know he's managed a little bit before he took over Ajax as caretaker manager for a while, and his record there in a few games was pretty decent. But I think the chances of us giving him more time when people at the club feel as though he maybe shouldn't get it, I just don't see that happening. I think another couple of results and it's very, very likely that he'll be leaving as well. And then that's when it becomes really interesting, because do you then go down the route of looking for a manager who can do both things, and the more sort of traditional Scottish, British way of running a football club, or do we go out and look for two new people? I have absolutely no idea. But what I do know is that the next couple of months is going to be a really interesting period of time for the club, and there's a lot for them to consider about where this leaves us overall. You could probably argue as well that it's a possibility for us to sort of reset a little bit, take a minute to think about what the long-term plan actually is, because the club had all these big ambitions. And maybe, are they questioning how realistic they were now? I have absolutely no idea. Do we take them a moment to, because there was always all this talk about Premiership football, European football, this and that, and does the club maybe take a step back and go, listen, let's just focus on staying in the Championship, becoming a solid Championship level club, and take it from there. I have absolutely no idea. I really don't know where this leaves us or what the next steps are and who's in charge of taking those steps.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, isn't it? It's like these sort of situations are always going to arise. People are going to come and go, etc., etc. But I have, at this stage, I have no genuine clarity as to who's making any of the decisions. So you're talking about, Veldman might have one or two games based off the results. Before we knew, and it's what you touched on earlier, David, we knew what Bucher's role was. He was dealing with all the football side. Anything to do with that came through him, hiring, firing, all that kind of stuff. Who makes that decision now? Who influences it? Do you know what I mean? Like, how much of an influence does hockey have? What does Leanne Dempster do? Who does XYZ? I'm not sure. And I think, see, when you combine all those different elements of the club where you're like, what are we actually going to be doing? That's where I'm just come back around to this, like a broken record, desperate for some sort of proper communications from the club to fans, because it is unsettling and we all want the best for the club. And it would just be kind of nice to know. Obviously, I'm not naive enough to think that they're going to come out and tell us line by line what their plans are for the next few months. But it would just be nice to know, even simple things like the intention, are we going to sign a new director of football, or are we just going to pie that role and just make the manager do everything like we used to? What is the approach? Exactly what you said, Enzo, about ambitions and stuff like that. It'd be nice to see somebody coming forward to give us those sort of communications, but I hold my breath, because I don't think I've ever seen it for coming from Queens, so I don't see why that would change now, unfortunately.
Well, you say you don't think the club are going to give us their plans for the next few months, however, I do believe that the annual general meeting, it will be due at some point. I think that's still due to be called, having spoke to a couple of other fans that are members in the club, so really that information perhaps should come there, so we'll maybe keep an eye out and see what happens if that's announced. But yeah, I suppose let's just round off on Bucher. You know, it is going to be very interesting to see the direction that we go. Obviously, you know, although he was only here 2 years, and you know, yes, it's a big concern, as was 2 years enough time to implement these changes? Well, it's, you look at all the coaching staff that were brought in. You see so many, you know, there's all this lifestyle coaching, all this kind of, or I don't know exactly what the title is, but you know, there's all these kind of guys around now at the club.
I don't know how bought in I am on the lifestyle coach idea, but
you know, but it's things like that show that drastic changes have been made in the 2 years that he has been here. And you've got to think, like, you know, led by people like Tommy McIntyre, you've got Thomas Roysink, you've got Paul Knighton as well, obviously he's now the assistant manager, but was obviously involved with the youth setup. You've got Pam aware as well. You know, so all these guys were brought in by Bucher, clearly share that philosophy and stuff. You hope it doesn't disrupt much because, well, I don't really know why, because I just mean because if you're going to believe what we were told over the last couple of years, that this will, if we stick with it, this will be good in a few years' time. And yet, you know, if we do stop and rip it up and start again or whatever, it's 2 years wasted, it's God knows how much money wasted, all that kind of thing, what kind of potential's wasted, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's gonna be very interesting to see over the coming weeks and months as to the direction the club take and well, as we say, who makes those decisions and who guides us that way. I'll just finally say, you know, again, I don't know if I've said it myself, I think you both did, but I do wish Marijn Bucher all the best at Ajax. It is obviously gutting to see him go, just because, obviously, as Queen's Park fans, but I will say it's gutting, actually, for the three of us, because some may know this, but many won't, that when we set up this wee podcast last summer and posted it on Twitter for the first time and we went through and just did the follow, all the people at Queen's Park, all the players and staff that we could find. One of the first, in fact, I think he was the first person to message us and just say, I'm looking forward to listening. Is this, you know, something different for Queen's Park? Was Marijn, and, you know, it gave us a chance to speak to him in person a number of times throughout the season. It was quite nice to have him just kind of supporting as well. It's a shame to lose him that way. I'm sure he'll be a little bit too busy and dealing with a few more important things at Ajax to keep listening on. But yeah, it was certainly an experience. Many may not agree with me and say it was great to have him at the club, but I do think it has been a very good experience for the club, and I hope that what he's done so far does pay off in the future. And yeah, just again, I do wish him all the best at Ajax.
Right, well summed up.
So, yeah, there we go. That's the big news story of the week. We did also get released by Queen's Park today a statement that Gardner Spears has left the club today after a total of 16 years at Queen's Park. He's taken a variety of different roles behind the scenes, but, of course, most notably, he was Queen's Park manager from the beginning of 2008 to the end of 2013. He had some good finishes in the league. He made the playoffs four times, wasn't it? Four times, let's see, the club statement. Second in the third division once, third place twice, and also finished in fourth. But then into the 13-14 season, I believe we were bottom of the table when he was relieved of his duties in December 2013. But some cracking players and some cracking teams under Gardner Spears, as shown by finishing in the playoffs four times. So we never managed the promotion, but, you know, he brought through some notable players. Guys like, he gave Andrew Robertson his debut, Lon Shankland, Barry Douglas. He signed QP legends like, the two Kilburnie Ladeside boys and Davy Anderson and Jamie Longworth. But for all the good, there was some absolutely mental at times under Gardner Spears. Some wild and wacky results and sometimes lineup decisions and things like that. And quite a wild time as manager particularly. So let's talk about that, because that was, I don't know what you guys think, but for me, I started like really following Queen's Park around about 2007 anyway. So when he came in, I only caught like the kind of tail end of the Billy Stark era, which we all know is held in such high regard by Queen's Park fans. But Gardner Spears was my kind of first proper experience with Queen's Park, and it was one hell of a wild ride.
Yeah, I think your summary was pretty good. I think on the whole, Gardner Spears was one of those kind of like classic Queen's Park managers that I'll always remember for various reasons, because on the signings front, you're totally right. He made a lot of really good signings, because I think you mentioned Longworth, Anderson. We also had like players that I liked anyway, Neil Parry, Little, Meggett. I think he signed all of those as well. And then the youth side, we also had Spittle, Connolly, Paul McGinn, I think, as well, didn't we? So there was a raft of signings that came through under him. We played a lot of good football, but we never really got the results despite getting to the playoffs. My brother was telling me that we actually didn't win a playoff game under Spears, which, I mean, I've not been able to check back and I can't quite remember, but We did get into the playoffs a few times, which wasn't the best record. But one of my favourite, and this is all in good spirits because he's been an absolutely great servant to the club, who I will admittedly, I actually didn't realise he was still here, to be honest.
you're not the only one that said that today.
Which is for my sins, I guess. I'm not sure what role he was taking, but 16 years is an awful long time and deserves plaudits for that. But one of my favourite memories of Gardner Spears is definitely in Peterhead away in the playoffs, when he decided to randomly bring back Chucky Watt from loan to bring him onto that game when he hadn't been near the club in ages, which was a bit wild. But lots of good players, lots of memories from his era.
He had some excellent players. See, when you look at the standard of some of the squads that he had to work with, you could, and I know we're supposed to be talking about what, like you say, what a good servant he was for the club. You could probably make a case that he's somewhat underachieved with that group of players. And I think maybe that final full season that he had where Rangers were also in the division, I know we ended up finishing third. We were, what, 2 or 3 points behind Peterhead in third place in the end. But I feel as though that was a team that would have competed to win that league title under normal circumstances, but they weren't normal circumstances given that Rangers had obviously been demoted down to the fourth tier at the time. But yeah, it's just it's incredible that somebody dedicated so much time and so many years to the club. So you just have to say, you know, best wishes, whatever he goes on to do next.
I'm just thinking, did they not technically have a second spell as Queen's Park manager? After Ellis left.
What do you class as a spell? Because
he was taking training, allegedly.
He was in an article where they said that him and Peter Grant were meant to be managing the team, and then like a couple of days later it was like, yeah, it's Bucher now, sorry.
Yeah, we just never bothered with that. I know that was a little bit odd. I don't think you can count that as a spell, unfortunately. I don't think an article's quite enough. But yeah, I mean, there were some, as I say, there was some wild moments in his time in charge. You know, obviously we won just as many games as we were beat by him with him in charge. His record, 162 games in total, 64 wins, 69 losses. You know, we scored plenty of goals, but yeah, as I say, we conceded a lot as well. It was his ability to, you mentioned it, Callum, especially that Peterhead, that was the 12-13 season, I'm sure, playoff. And we were 1-0 down in the first leg. And I'm sure Chucky Watt had been sent out on loan in January or March, whatever, to, I'm sure it was like a junior, like I don't even think it was like a Lowland, or was it even Lowland or Highland League? It might have been even lower than that. And then all of a sudden he comes back in, 1-0 down, playoff semi-final, second leg, and he starts Ian Watt. And but like you've got like Jamie Longworth on the bench at the time when you're like in a game where you're chasing goals, which was, you know, one of many well decisions. He started and he put Tony Quinn up front, which, to be fair, worked out a few times. So that was a bit of a stroke of genius.
Quinn and Keenan.
Yeah,
I remember at one point.
Two centre halves up front. You know, I mean, as I say, it did work. God knows how, but sometimes it did work. Quinnell scoring goals was absolutely fantastic to see back then. But you know, he was a fantastic servant to Queen's Park. Whatever he goes on and does now, whether he is going elsewhere or whatever he may well be doing, once again, wish him all the very best. Long time servant at Queen's Park, so yeah, absolutely deserves our well wishes there.
It was, by the way, it was Carluke Rovers that Ian Watt was in on loan to. Yeah, Carluke Rovers.
Wow.
And he called him back for that one game.
And he subbed him at half time.
He did, yeah. Subbed him off at half time. Were we 2-0 down or 2-1 down at half time, I think? I can't remember.
I mean, it was Peterhead away. I'm just surprised it wasn't like 3 or 4 by that point because we never bloody won up there.
I know. I do recall that. That game, obviously, Peterhead, fantastic ground because you've got the wee social club you can walk around to. I think, unfortunately for Gardner on that day, it was obviously right beside, the entrance to the social club was right beside the Queen's Park dugout. I know there were a few fans that had some choice words to say to him on that day. But as I say, overall, you can laugh about it now. Yeah, as I say, just do wish him all the best in whatever he goes on to do. I suppose what we'll do, we'll use this to promote, well, we've got this QP supporters buses available for the trip to Morton. That is on December the 16th. It's going to be leaving Clarkson Toll at 1 o'clock and the Tesco at Hampden at 1:15. Tickets for the bus, £8 for an adult, or £10 if you're an adult and a child under 16. And the link to book that is, as always, queensparkonlineshop.co.uk. And you've also got, this Sunday, you've got Queen's Park Women hosting Kilmarnock. So that's first versus second in SWPL 2. That is New Tintal Park. This Sunday, it's the last home game of the year for Queen's Park Women. It's a New Tintal Park, 3 o'clock kickoff. £6 for adults, £2 for concessions. I tell you what, I'll say that I'll retweet it, but I'll retweet it right now as we're talking about it. Make sure that is shared on our timeline so everybody can see the details of that as well. It'd be great to see as many people get along to that as possible. Of course, we still hope that we might get the chance to play at Lesser Hampden. Who knows if that will change in the near future, but that's a conversation to have again another day. So yeah, this Sunday, New Tintal Park against Kilmarnock. A win there would... I'd really have one hand on the trophy, wouldn't it?
Maybe, it opens a massive gap. If we beat Kilmarnock on Sunday, that opens a 10-point gap after 12 games, which is pretty incredible. Obviously, the goal difference is wild at this point too. So fingers crossed they can get the job done, because obviously the game that they did lose this season was to Kilmarnock away last time they played against them down at Rugby Park. So we'll see how that goes. Another wee bit of news actually that's maybe worth highlighting regarding the women's team is that Ellie Kane has been nominated for Player of the Month yet again, which would be absolutely absurd if she were to win that.
That before she got that?
It would be 4 in a row, yeah.
My goodness, that is nuts. But well deserved again to be nominated. I mean, when you're on that run of form, you can't really dispute it, can you?
No, exactly. It would be a ridiculous achievement. So obviously, good luck to Ellie, and fingers crossed she picks up that award.
Yeah, 100%. And as I say, we will be keeping a close eye on that result, and I'm sure we'll talk about that next week. Hopefully it is another win for Queen's Park Women. So then, yeah, let's move on to this Saturday. The men's team, back in action, fingers crossed. It seems like the snow and the ice is pretty much, certainly for myself down on the West Coast, it's pretty much all disappeared now, so hopefully it's the same in Glasgow. It will be the visit of Inverness Cali Thistle to Hampden in the Scottish Championship, which, if you need reminding of the league table, I tell you what, I won't run through the entire thing. What I will say is it's a pretty big game at this moment in time, because Inverness and Queen's Park are level in terms of points, in terms of games played, which both are 13, and also the same results, the same record so far, 3 wins, 4 draws, 6 losses. But Inverness do have the upper hand, a slightly better goal difference. So I know I personally have, well, we obviously, when Duncan Ferguson was announced and we spoke about it a few weeks ago on here, I think we all made our feelings pretty clear. I continued to make my feelings clear in a group chat with some of the Queen's Park boys, and I seem to be reminded of it every single week that he was going undefeated until their game, because they actually played at the weekend, their game went ahead. They were at home to Raith Rovers. Raith Rovers scoring 2 goals after the 85th minute to turn it around.
It's familiar.
One. Yeah, I know it does, doesn't it? Including an injury time penalty. You know, imagine that. What are the odds? But that was Duncan Ferguson's first defeat as Inverness manager. But despite the fact I still believe that he is a bit of a tit, I still have to admit as well that he has had a pretty good turnaround in their fortune since he came in.
Oh, it's a new manager bounce isn't unusual, is it, really? He's come in, he's won them a few games. I know that they beat Arbroath, didn't they? And they drew with Thistle, I think, beat Airdrie, drew with Dundee United. But the past few weeks, though, I don't know about that, because obviously they drew with Dunfermline a few weeks ago. They made hard work of Cowdenbeath in the Scottish Cup, only beating them 2-0. And I think the goals didn't come until the second half, and they lost that Wraith game. The Wraith are a good team, but I'm not convinced it's going to be sustainable long term. And I don't know. I think this game is winnable, which is nuts considering we don't win any games. But I'm not entirely convinced that he will long term pan out to be a great appointment for them, especially given that they gave him a 3-year contract. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, I think long-term credentials obviously still to be questioned, but he is having that impact that Inverness would have been desperately hoping for, which is unfortunate for us, because you mentioned it, David, this is a huge, huge game. Everyone's pretty much caught up with us now, almost, in terms of games played, and Inverness sitting on 13 points alongside ourselves. So it's going to be, I don't want to use that term, a six-pointer, but it is to a degree. And if we kind of lose this game, it's another team that's going to be pulling away from us and sort of keeping us in and around that bottom three, which we obviously do not want. My concern with this game is that I think Wotherspoon's had a bit of an impact with Inverness, and him and Mackay up front does sound like a pretty decent combination, to be honest. And against our defensive record, I'm less convinced about that. However, I don't think it means that we cannot go and win this game. I would like to think that the extra week of training for McKinstry, another week off, getting more and more match fit, is going to be a benefit to him. And hopefully he can put in a wee bit of a better performance than, I mean, everyone was horrific in the last game, to be fair, but hopefully he can put in a bit of a better performance and we can see a wee bit more about what he's about. But yeah, there's absolutely no reason that we can't go and win this game. They fall into that camp of pretty much everyone else in the league outside the top three, where everyone is entirely beatable. And frankly, we're due a win.
That's right. I mean, we can't. This terrible run has to come to an end at some point. It really does. It can't last forever. I'm not convinced that they are world beaters or anything like that. Yeah, they've picked up a few more wins because they had a horrific start to the season. But bear in mind, remember they had Billy Dodds in charge beforehand. Any of us could have walked into that dressing room and get a bit of a reaction out of them compared to Billy Dodds. That might very well be listening back to this or looking back on this after the game on Saturday thinking you were talking absolute nonsense. But I'm not entirely convinced. I think they have a decent squad. They have some really, really solid players. But a record against Inverness over the past year and a half, is pretty decent. And I don't think this is a terrible time to be playing them now that they've come off a couple of not particularly fantastic performances. As you say, we've had a wee bit of a break. Might do us some good, might not, who knows, but Veldman said hopefully time to work on the issues that we saw at Firhill last week, and the issues were glaringly obvious. We were absolutely horrific that day. But I'm cautiously optimistic about this one.
Yeah, I mean, I watched, it was a few weeks ago now, it was Dunfermline Inverness on the telly on the Friday night, and Inverness, they weren't great in that game. Dunfermline hit the post like 7 or 8 times in that game. It was absolutely wild, but Inverness kind of stole the lead going into half time, and then were absolutely like just so under the cosh the entire second half, and they still got away with a point, so I mean, fair enough there, but they weren't great that game. Then the week after that, they beat Cowdenbeath in the Scottish Cup. Okay, fine. You cannot read anything at that at all. But then, you see, obviously that game against Raith Rovers, okay, yes, again, it took 2 late goals for Raith to turn around and to win it. But again, when you kind of read on like Pye and Bovril about the match thread and see what was going on there, when you pick through the usual kind of weirdo Inverness fans that post everywhere, I don't understand them, but when you pick through some of them, it certainly seemed like Raith dominated that game again, and Inverness were almost lucky to get out with, or to seemingly be hanging on to a draw until a late injury time penalty conceded by one Louis Longstaff. So,
is he still playing?
Yeah, it looks like he's been getting on off the bench recently, in the last couple of games.
So. That's right, there was a rumour he might actually be going back to Cove on loan, potentially. I don't know how realistic that was. I was kind of shocked and horrified to see the Cove fan on Pye and Bovril quite excited at that prospect, considering they're doing really well right now. Paul Hartley actually just won Manager of the Month, which is hilarious, but I think they won every single game in November, so fair enough, they're in a really good run of form. But yeah,
why would they want to ruin that with Louis Long?
Yeah, I think his exact comment was he would tear this league apart. Now I don't know about you guys, but I don't remember Louis Longstaff tearing League One apart when he was at us.
No. But then, I don't know. He seems to have done well up there. I mean, obviously, I get nightmares going back to that Friday night game against Cove last year in the Championship, and Longstaff whipped in that cross about 2 minutes into the game to give Cove the lead. He clearly can do it when he can be okay when he wants, and we just never seen that at all in his time at Queen's Park, unfortunately. But he's still playing for Inverness. I mean, seems obviously, yeah, David Wallace, since he came in, obviously with Duncan Ferguson signing him, he does seem to have really kicked on and helped him out recently. But at the same time, they've also brought in Killian Sheridan, who, by all accounts, has been an absolute donkey.
Which, yeah, he's been terrible for them. Some of the comments I've read from their fans, they want rid of him already.
Yeah, so I suppose just we'll need to wait and see how they line up and what we can certainly do there. I say, Calum, you've already kind of mentioned Stuart McKinstry. You hope he's maybe another week or two full training and up to full fitness. Is there any other changes that you'd be looking to make after what was, of course, last time we'll mention it, a disappointing last time out against Partick Thistle?
I have absolutely no idea at this point. I mean, what realistic options do we have? There isn't that much that I think we're going to be changing in and about the squad. I'd probably still be playing McPherson at right back. Obviously, Ferry's should be keeping his spot for as long as he's playing it the way that he is. No, I don't think there is. I would still be starting McKinstry because there's no way that we can be signing someone of that pedigree on paper, at least, and not trying to bed him into the team. I think we just kind of need to see the guys step up. Maybe the only other change that I'd potentially be making is making sure that I don't know if I'd want to have Hepburn involved later in the game or whether I'd want to see him at the start, but it's going to be McKinstry and Thomas, realistically.
I think that makes sense because on paper it's the best we have. And it's actually arguably on paper when you include Rory Payton, one of the best forward lines in the division. They've just not been shown what they are. Well, I'm going to say, that's harsh, actually. I was going to say they've not been shown what they're capable of doing. That's not true because they've not really played together other than that Thistle game. It doesn't really count because it was McKinstry's first time out for us, and Dom Thomas has been fantastic in spells this season. Rory Payton is still banging them in. So I'm confident that if McKinstry can show us what he's capable of, and he is capable, this is a guy that's got off the bench for Leeds. This is a guy who was arguably one of Motherwell's best players in his last spell there. So if they can click, then that could be a really, really potent attack. I mean, we are scoring plenty of goals these days, to be fair. There's been a few games where we haven't. The Thistle game was one of them, unfortunately. But I would like to see the manager persist with the three of them together.
All right. Well, then let's do our match prediction, shall we? Obviously, nothing to even pretend to update because, of course, the game never went ahead. Do our predictions roll over, Calum, or will we recall them when the game is announced, when it's rescheduled? What's the rules there?
I think we'll let ours re-predict at the time because it won't be until well into January, won't it? So we'll hold off on that one.
All right then. So who's first? Is it?
Let me see. So I'm still on 16 points, as are you, David. Endo, you are... Oh, no, wait, hold on. I can't count, sorry. I'm on... David, you're on 11. I'm on 11. And Endo, you're on 15. So, David, you can go.
Can I not go back to being on 16 points? No.
No, sorry.
Ah, right, okay, fair enough. That's worth a go. 2-0 Queen's Park. Rory Payton to score first and Jack Turner.
Okie doke. So Payton to score, Turner. All right, cool. I am going to go for 3-1. 3-1 Queens. I've got to be a wee bit more optimistic. I will have Dom Thomas scoring the first and then I will also have Payton and McKinstry.
Okay, that's interesting. I was going to go 3-1 as well, so I'm actually going to go with a bit of a nail biter 3-2 Queens win.
Ooh.
And I'm going to stick my neck out and say that McKinstry will start and that he will score the first goal too, with the other two coming from Rory Payton.
Classic, getting back to your roots with Payton.
Back to my double.
It's been a wee bit since you've had that, right, Magic? I suppose we had Inverness Wraith last week. The only other game that went ahead, Partick Thistle beat Airdrie 2-1. And then, well, into this weekend, we have Wraith versus Partick Thistle, Airdrie Dunfermline, Arbroath versus Morton, Arbroath with Jim McIntyre at the helm there. I'm not actually sure, Enzo. I'll ask you after I say it's also Dundee United versus Ayr. Enzo, is Jim McIntyre better or worse than Dick Gamble?
It's a funny one, that. I think they could do worse than Jim McIntyre. Jim McIntyre would probably, in my opinion, have kept Cove up because they were going fairly steady when they decided to get rid of him. I know the football they played was a wee bit turgid, but they were getting results. I'm not entirely sure. It sounds as though he's planning on changing the shape up a wee bit, and he might have a few signings that he fancies bringing in January too. But I'm hopeful that he will turn out to be a terrible appointment because we probably need him to be.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you hear about Jim McIntyre as a sort of man manager is utterly horrific. So I'm hoping that plays out, particularly as you would expect. I thought it was a bit of an odd one. I don't know who I would have expected to be signing for Arbroath there, but I'm not sure he would have been top of my list, and I'd question whether he was top of Arbroath's list either. But yeah, all we can hope is he continues in the vein of Dick Campbell and fails massively, because we might need it.
Yeah, we all certainly hope that we turn this around, but you know, something, anything that gives us that little bit of a cushion, then yeah, absolutely, I'd love to see Jim McIntyre carry on where Dick Campbell left off. That'll pretty much do it.
Who do you want to win out of that game though, where Broth versus Morton?
A draw.
Draw and Queen's Park win.
And that kind of drags us away from them a wee bit, and it pulls Inverness back into it as well, because they were getting a wee bit too big for their boots, if you ask me, after a few decent results. So a wee reminder for them that they are in a relegation battle as well.
I'll take that.
We'd absolutely love that. That, as I say, that pretty much does it. Last thing, why not a quick talk about Scotland and the Euro group draw was at the weekend there as well. Scotland versus, Germany versus Scotland, shouldn't that, to open the Euros. And then we've also got Hungary and Switzerland in the group. Callum, you first, because I know Enzo's a little bit dour about international football right now. Callum, how do you feel about that group?
Unfortunately, I don't have anything booked to go like you do, David, so I'm not at the same level as a buzz as yourself. I'm sure I'll get there as the tournament comes closer, but I think that's a pretty good draw, to be honest. I was pretty happy with it. You're so used to seeing any sort of group draw for qualifying or whatever, and Scotland ending up in the worst group, and I don't think that is by a long margin. I know that Hungary are doing pretty well, but you don't go into any of those games, and I would include Germany in that. We're obviously the massive favourites, right? And first game at this of the tournament, etc., is perhaps not ideal, but it's not the same Germany side that we've seen a year's gone by. So yeah, it's exciting. It's just good to be talking about Scotland being involved in these tournaments, isn't it? Instead of having to just kind of watch it from afar and sit wistfully wondering what it'd be like to be in them.
Switzerland haven't been great recently, so I think, I know that they're a decent side, but the only two teams that they've really beaten recently, I think they've played Andorra a couple of times and they won those games, as they should. One of them they actually only won 2-1 as well. I think out of the fourth, given that you could have potentially had Italy in pot four, I think Switzerland's all right. Hungary are a good team, but again, Germany definitely one of the better options in that first pot. And it's going to be very exciting to be involved in the opening game against the hosts. I know that I saw the ticket prices for that were a little bit wild, because the opening game, unlike the other group games, is priced the same as the semi-final. The tickets for the opening game, some of them are as dear as €600, which feels a bit wild. There are some cheaper ones as well, and I think the folk that have a lot of tickets at a lot of points through go to Scotland games can potentially get one for considerably cheaper than that, but I was a wee bit surprised to see that. But I'm just hoping that when the tournament comes around, we get a nice summer next year, and it's perfect beer garden weather, and there'll definitely be a bit of a buzz about the country, whether you're in Germany or whether you're just enjoying it at home.
Yeah, no, I think it was about as good as the draw could have gone. I mean, you could have asked for maybe in pot four instead of Switzerland, one of the other playoff winners. But see, as long as you avoided Italy in pot four, quite frankly, that's a win. Germany, you could argue, I mean, there's a few in pot one you just do not want at all. Germany's one of those ones where you're right, you could just kind of go, yeah, I actually don't hate it. So, again, you've got to take that. And Hungary, yeah, they are a decent side. They did pretty well at the Euros last, did they not, I'm sure. So, that could be a tough game, but just very much looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm booked up for Dusseldorf for the first week of the tournament, so won't make it to Munich to be in the same city for the opening game, but the second group game, I think, is that the one against Switzerland? I think it might be. That's in Cologne, so that's about half an hour away or so on the train. So, one way or another, I'll be in Cologne, and I've applied for tickets through the ballot. And who knows?
I think fingers crossed.
I have to cross everything. I'm not a religious man, but I have to pray to every single god going that one of them gives me tickets. If that's what makes it work, then that'd be amazing. But yeah, even just to be out there, and you know, as you said, Calum, just to be involved in the group draw. That's the first time in. Right, okay. First time since 1997, so we were, what, 5, 6, something like that, the last time a group. So let's be honest, it's the first time really in our life that we've been able to experience Scotland in a group draw. I was sitting shaking, and my leg was tapping away like mad watching the group. I was just as nervous at that as I am at any game, so it was some buzz. But yeah, very much looking forward to that, but of course, until then, there's a lot of football for Queen's Park to be played first, and that's where our focus does have to lie. And fingers crossed, how many times do we have to say it? Fingers crossed, this run ends this Saturday at home to Inverness. But until then, Calum and Enzo, it's been a pleasure as always. Continue to find us on Twitter at Spiders Talk Pod, and find us on Pie and Bovril in all the threads relating to Queen's Park. Thank you for coming back and listening to us again this week, and we will see you all again next week.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. Because of the Dundee Cup final, league match or friendly. But then because of the Dundee, play for the sake of the game. Play for the sake of the game.